Welcome back to Legend in the Field, where every episode brings you closer to the trends and solutions driving the future of agriculture. I'm your host, Shelby Landmark, and I'm excited to say we're in episode number 4. We've made it 4 episodes into the Legend in the Field podcast. And this time, I am coming to you from East Central South Dakota, the home ground of Legend Seeds. And today, I have the privilege of introducing two guys. So I have two guests on the podcast. And one hails from the Hand State of Wisconsin, and the other one from all the way over in Michigan, Charlie Gum. So Steve Nielsen and Charlie Gum are my two guests today. And it's an interesting topic because we're coming into close to harvest season, and it's kind of been a whirlwind of weather events and different growing seasons all across the Midwest. But Charlie and Steve have a very good insight into building out a crop plan and really honing in on the nitty-gritty when it comes to figuring out basically how to do what we do. So I want to start with Steve. You have been with Legend Seeds how many years?
I have been with Legend Seed for 15 years at the end of this selling season. So I'm starting my 16th sales year with Legend here, starting here in August.
Very nice. And I guess we'll start with you, Steve. What's your story? You've been here for 15 years, but where did you start when you came to Legend Seeds, and how did you get to where you are now?
We were talking about that today. We had a kickoff meeting in Marshfield, and they were kind of making fun of me because when I started, I was kind of I think I was the bottom rung of the ladder. I've delivered seed, and I've planted plots, and I've sold seed, and I've signed up dealers, and I've been at all parts of Legend. So my story really starts, for me anyway, I started as an account manager, just as a general sales guy. But at that time when I started, there was also delivery stuff that you had to do, and I treated seed and all this kind of stuff too, you know, made pallets and that kind of stuff. So so my story is that I got to start at the very bottom of the ladder, I guess, when it comes to of when or what I did when I started. And from there, I moved from an LAM. Then I moved to what we had at the time, a team leader, where I had some LAMs that were responsible. I was responsible for, and to, you know, fast forward today where I'm the overall sales manager for the sales team. So I do have the privilege though of saying that I was the guy that got to hire Charlie, my counterpart that's on the call, whether he's, you know, willing to accept the responsibility of liking me hiring him or not. I guess I don't know about that, but that's so I've been involved in all sides of it, of the people side, managing people, managing products, managing acres for individual growers, helping dealers with all of what selling seed is. So I've done it pretty much all at Legend since I started.
Yeah, absolutely. And Charlie, you are considered a rock star salesman over there in Michigan because you have to basically take over the entire state. but kind of give us your story. Legend backstory?
So like Steve said, where Steve started at the bottom, that's where I'm at, but that's okay. I like it. So anyway, so I came from a retailer. I worked there for about 6 years and kind of wanted to do something different. Actually, a recruiter reached out to me and introduced me to Legend Seeds. And I interviewed with Steve and another individual, and it's worked out well. I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Legend Seeds, obviously the selling, the dealers. So we work with all the dealer networks, retail networks throughout the state. It is a large geography, but, you know, from the UP down to like the Ann Arbor area. So we encompass a lot of acres east to west and north and south. But the thing I enjoy the most is making dealers successful. If we make our dealers successful, then the growers are successful with providing the right products, the right biological products that'll perform on their acres. So that's kind of my background, my story, and we're into another year already. And so, you know, folks should be thinking about 2026 and what their plan of attack is as far as acreage and product needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and so that kind of takes me to my first question, Charlie, and I'll have you go first with this. So evaluating field performance, whether it's as we get closer to it, as post-harvest happens and you can evaluate how you're, I mean, beyond just yield, evaluating that field, evaluating how that hybrid or that variety performed, how those biological products took care of the soil or took care of that plant. What do you start with when you're shaping next year's crop plan? I mean, what's kind of the step-by-step as you're evaluating the performance beyond that yield? What should they be kind of thinking about?
So, you know, when we place or I place or a dealer places a product, the research behind that is years. So we have the research. We do a lot of local research as well. So dealers, myself, can have the confidence to go to the growers saying this product has performed in your geography. The big thing this year is the biologicals. Now, in the middle of the state of Michigan, we're under a severe drought. So corn started firing about 3 weeks ago. So we have obviously biological products that really need to be looked at. And it's just not adding something to add something. These products have worked. We've tested them locally, not only in Michigan, but throughout the Legend footprint. And that's something, you know, when you're looking at N, P, and K is N, P, and K. So, you know, as we all know, phosphorus doesn't move in the soil profile as much. We have biologicals. In fact, a new dealer did a NutriQuire starter, and it's phenomenal how the plant health is and how far along it is compared to when his check area. So seed selection is first and foremost, but to bundle that in with the biologicals is critical. And this time of year, and I know it's, you know, maybe hard-pressed to get cash, but the discounts are the largest from now until, you know, the end of October, especially if you're going to finance it. You know, on JDF, JDF is excellent to work with, 0%, not due till the following December of that particular planting season. So getting your products early, yes, we can make changes. It happens all the time, and that's totally understood. But to get the balance of your needs taken care of early will enhance your return on investment immensely.
So Steve, what can you say on the side of either a grower or a dealer? How should they approach that as well? Kind of give your feedback there.
Yeah, I guess my background before I started working at Legend, so what kind of shapes my answer here. It's probably a little different than what Charlie gave there, which was very good. But I've been a row crop farmer most of my life. I started on my own farming in, I guess, around 1990, and just the way life has it, I pretty much retired from farming, not from working, but in 2022. So when Shelby sent these questions out, you know, about and kind of gave us some insights of what she was going to ask us today about how you would evaluate field performance, I go back to when I was working at the John Deere level. You know, you have the experience of that crop, you know, running through the machine, you know, so you can look at all aspects. It's not, you got to look at, you know, you find a lot of answers in the residue after it's over. But the biggest thing is not anything you probably think I'm going to say, but when you evaluate performance, you have to look in the mirror first. You have to look at the decisions that you made previously and try to root out where there might be more profit potential or why maybe you did, you know, maybe you would just tweak something a little different based just solely on what you did, just solely on a mechanical operation or a timing thing. And then what Charlie said is right as far as going into next year's crop plan, after you kind of understand kind of the all the stuff that happened during a year that you really don't have a lot of control over. It does go back to, you know, a variety selection is one of the biggest things that is what you have to start planning with, what you think you should plant. But when you look at your total field performance, you know, post-harvest, when you're looking at, you know, your question was, Shelby, you know, what's beyond yield? There's so much that happens to that crop after it's harvested, you know, that come into what you should think about when you're planting, you know, what, you know, if you're a grain guy, how does it store? How did it dry? Those sorts of things, you know, did it clean easy in the combine? All those sorts of little things may influence or should influence kind of the decisions you make. If you're going to run that product through a cow, either for milk or for, how did the silage hold up? You know, what was it like in the bunker? All those little things, you know, that's well beyond yield. That's well, but what your experience said on the tons in the chopper wagons or what the monitor was reading in your combine, you know, that's all beyond that. So, but I think Charlie was probably right on the start of it is that from my point of view, when you're planning next year, you're thinking about all of the things that you've done. You got to look in the mirror. Then the next obvious step to me is just to really, really dive in with your agronomist or if you're a dealer working with agronomist or if you're a grower working with your dealer and the Legend agronomist, really ask questions, hard questions about, geez, was I on the right? Did I leave anything on the table here? And the variety selection is probably the biggest thing to think about when you start planning for the next season.
Yeah, and that does kind of go into a question too. And I'm throwing this one at both of you. Really comes down to that trait selection because things are changing constantly in the trait world, and soils are changing, tolerances are changing, and it just seems like there's so many options out there that us too, my husband and I as farmers, it's kind of like, well, we had this issue this year, but will it affect our choices next year, depending on, you know, you have no idea what the weather's going to do next year. We have no idea what it's necessarily going to be like in June when we start planting next year. Like how do you go about that? I guess maybe I'll throw this at you, Charlie. When you have those conversations with those dealers or those dealers bring you on to talk to those growers, what is your first question that you ask when it comes to someone who has no idea which direction they should go because it's almost like they've gone through any and all situations in their right operations? What are those questions that you ask first to really hone in what direction they should go?
So a lot of it, you know, depends on geography, but I've always been a proponent, whether they have Legend corn or a competitor, like you said, they're the new traits, the new varieties, the new hybrids coming. I mean, they're coming at a rampant rate. So you always have to have the next new product, not saying do 100 acres, but you've got to have a sample out there because things change, weather changes, et cetera. Guys have their favorite hybrids. Steve knows that. We've had a couple bang up hybrids over in Michigan for a long time.
You really like a few, though. You like a few 9999s.
Yeah. Yes, we did. And so, but you know, and there's a couple guys that you know, well, I've got one downstate that, nope, I don't want to try anything else. And I'm like, look, this is not going to be around forever. So now we're kind of at ground zero with him, but that's my problem. We'll figure that out together. So, you know, the agronomist, I mean, you got to look at the data. I mean, Jake and our agronomy team, they see these hybrids, I don't know, I'm going to say 5 years, maybe 7 years before we even know about them. So it's critical that you continue to plant newer varieties, because the seed world is constantly evolving with new, better genetics, better performing products. So I don't know if that answers everything, but hopefully it did.
Well, Steve, maybe you can kind of give your side on it too, of making those smarter seed decisions too. What's
something that
you can
Shelby, use. I don't know if you should use smarter in that phrase with me involved, but we'll take it. I think Charlie alluded to it probably on the variety selection here is, you know, you're looking at a, you know, a changing environment and you want to always try to be the guy that's, you know, makes the right selection, the kind of stuff. You have to remember when you get done evaluating your harvest and you get done looking at yield maps or however you're, you know, whatever, however you're going to measure your output, you know, whatever results that you had, that that is a snapshot in time for one season.
Right.
So you, I guess the first thing that it, when I was an LAM or even now when I deal with new customers that I get out in the country, some still is, you know, what do you know about the, you know, what's your history? You know, what are the things that you have seen that you have liked, you know, that have seemed to you, and that was, you know, yield is one thing, but, you know, all the other factors, environmental factors, that kind of stuff, you really got to understand the history of where products come from as part of your planning for the next year. And Charlie's right. You might have some just things that you really want to keep in, and you're maybe following some pedigrees through the system, and Jake and Wrestler are working with you really hard to make sure you got the right products on the acre, or you're selling the right products if you're a dealer. But again, you need to know, it could be the worst performing thing that you've ever had. You still should probably look at it just based on history. And the same thing, if you've had a very good, you know, success with a hybrid, you know, you need to, there's, you got to look at the history on them, you know, several years backwards is always best practice, you know, if you can, when you're starting to think about your next play or what you got to, you know, figure out what to adapt to the next year, is to really truly understand what happened to you on one year. But then what is, ask your agronomist, like Charlie said before, you know, get the backside information. What happened to the next guy down the road with a similar product, and what happened 2 years ago or 3 years ago? What did it look like? Was an experimental? So it's kind of a long answer, but you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't want to miss something because you're stuck on, you know, one product or another. So, but Charlie also referenced to just, you got to take a leap of faith too, a little bit, you know, you got to jump off, you know, I'm pretty proud of pushing all my kids off the end of the pool, teaching them how to swim. You know, we got to push some farmers into the deep end of the pool once in a while too, on, you know, stuff that they're not familiar with. They need to get some acres out there and try some things that maybe they don't know about in order to get some experience there.
Yeah. And like you said, like both of you guys said, when it comes to trying those new products, guys are very leery because, as I can attest to, that not a lot of farmers like change. So when it comes to incorporating agronomic data, sometimes that can be a scary phrase for some people, because we've been doing it this way for many years. We've always done the 96 day, we've always done 101 day, and we're not, you know, veering from that. How do things like tissue sampling or soil testing, tracking weather patterns, do those things actually make a difference in your decision making? Should they? How should they be looking at those things to really give a better understanding of what they should be planting in their fields?
Absolutely. Especially so, I've been a huge advocate of tissue sampling, and here's the thought process. So you do a tissue sample and it's showing deficient nitrogen or phosphorus. Okay. Then you do a soil test and you say, well, geez, my phosphorus levels are through the roof. And this is all going to play into the biologicals. So the tissue sampling is showing deficient in phosphorus, maybe deficient in nitrogen. You got a load of phosphorus on your acres. You put plenty of nitrogen down. Maybe it leached, maybe a dry spell and the plant wasn't getting the nitrogen it needed. So that's where Legend Seeds has products like Emphasis, which is a nitrogen fixation product, and NutriQuire, which is a soil applied product that makes those elements N, P, and K more readily available. So tissue sampling, in my retail years, I did a lot of them. I can't say too many, but I really took a lot of merit in a tissue sample and what it was telling us, what it was telling us about the plant at that particular time. So, you know, that gives you the ability to make some adjustments earlier in the year, you know, that hopefully we can combat the deficiencies. So, and of course, you know, the weather patterns play the role in the tissue sampling and the soil test as well. So I think biologicals are very important. They need to be incorporated into your crop plan because there is a better. We've tested it in Michigan. I've got two guys that will test it. We always have new products, but we're going to test it, get the results before we can go to the dealers and the growers with confidence that, hey, look at this stuff works.
Sure. So I'm not going to skip over you with Steve that, but that I just kind of want to get to my next question because I'm curious to know common mistakes. Now, aside from Legend Seeds has great cash discounts. We've got a great schedule that we put out there. But aside from those necessarily, there are probably some common mistakes that growers can make. Everybody makes mistakes, especially when it comes to farming, because you never know what's going to happen. But when planning for the next season, whether it's too early or too late, can you give me a couple or a few insights into some best timing practices when it comes to choosing out your crop plan, what you're going to put in there?
Ooh, is that to me first?
Yes.
Okay. I think there are two enormous mistakes that farmers make, and I don't want anyone listening to think that I'm, you know, just being critical of every farmer, but I looked in the mirror at things that I thought were common mistakes that my agronomist worked with me very diligently to cure. And the first mistake that growers make is making a decision. Corn, beans, you know, probably more so influenced here than some of the other crops, you know, but particularly row crops, is making a decision based on 1 year's experience.
Sure.
I think selling or buying seed off a strip trial is I think that's ridiculous. Now, that strip trial can confirm, you know, some of your gut feeling, or it can kind of point you in a direction of what else to look for in other, like to your previous question, a strip trial can kind of give you direction on what you should look for in some other data points. Maybe a crop, you know, or a certain variety just didn't do well because of it, for whatever reason, something in the soil test there showed up, or it wasn't picking up something, or there wasn't, you know, there, like Charlie's point on the biological side, that, you know, the soil test or a tissue test just showed, well, wow, all the stuff is there. You just need something to, you know, free up that nutrient, you know? So you gotta, a common mistake that run into, I think, the first one is just making a decision based off a strip trial. I just think that or like a plot, one plot result without any background history, I think is a fatal mistake. And the second one that I had to cure myself of, I farmed in northern Wisconsin. You know, there's more geese and rocks and lakes than there are cornfields, right? So I was always careful on the dollar side, you know, my output potential as far as what I could grow for crops, you know, on 1200 acres that I was farming, you know, at my peak. You know, there wasn't what would be considered highly productive ground, but no matter what environment you're in, making a decision based on the dollar of the bag is also a very bad mistake, I think, for most to fall into. Now, dollars are always going to come into play, but you need to think about what your output potential is, you know, current price of corn, those sorts of things. You need to buy what you need for the acre. Okay. You don't need to try to make something fit the acre. You need to get and buy what you need for the acre based on what that acre needs, not what the dollars are. So the two mistakes that I confront, that I think I cured myself of, is, you know, just not relying on one snapshot in time of the product that you're going to buy. And you need to really focus your attention on what that product will do on the backside of it. Because frankly, no one knows the price of a bag of seed corn when they plant it, you know, until it gets sold across the scale or through a cow or in a milk tank. You don't really know what the price of corn is. So you need to really focus on what the potential of that is, as opposed to the dollars on the front side. Those are my two big, what I feel are mistakes for the industry, not just Legend, but I think the industry overall.
Yeah, no, great. I think those are two great points, Steve, and thanks for sharing those. So when it really comes down to it, when you sit down to build your 2026 plan, that's what some guys are going to start doing here once, you know, kind of prepping for harvest because they know that it's going to come hot and heavy, that when they sit down, Charlie, what's the key thing in your mind that they should be honing in on or what they should do differently based on what we've seen this past year in 2025? And I know that's a kind of a loaded question, and it might seem, maybe Steve, I'll start with you on this. How do you think they should be going into 2026 after what happened in 2025?
Oh, there are, well, like when Charlie started this call, he was, you know, kind of griping a little bit about not having any rain in where he lives, Michigan. Now, you come across Lake Michigan and they had 15 inches of rain between Milwaukee and Chicago here just a few days ago. And it's been pretty sultry or wet conditions over the lot of our trade area, you know, and then you combine that. So you have those differing factors of weather. Then you have the, you know, we've had Canadian wildfires and the smoke and days of sun and humidity. I mean, there's so many things that are completely beyond our control that we're learning about. So I think really paying attention to how this crop finishes, what it looks like at growth stages based on all those weather factors is probably going to be one thing that you didn't do from 25. We had some rough weather in 25 too, but we had an extended period at the end of 25 to finish a crop. Oh, there weren't as many factors across the geography that Legend represents than there are this year. So sure. I think it'd be a little different this year. It's a really, you know, Jake is really good at this, agronomist, and there's other, you know, websites you can use, but I would suggest to all farmers going in the end of this year and they're thinking about starting next year is really to look at some long-term history on weather. We are just it's a little different this year, and it's been rough for a lot of folks on a lot of things. And that would be different. That would be something that I have not challenged my growers or my customers, my dealers really to look at, but Jake and Anderley, our agronomist, has got a great, tool that he uses. It's a tar spot tracker. And Jeff Sorensen has got another agronomist from Minnesota. It's got a great history website he uses on weather events, you know, across Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, essentially across our trade area. I think going into this next year, you might want to look at some of that before you make your final decision. That would be something that's different than what I would have advised over previous years, just based on the experience that I've had this year. The also is that, you know, it's August. We have time to kind of study those things right now, along with all the other plot days and field events, that kind of stuff. I think understanding kind of what all of those factors are is a different course of action and looking at weather than what I would have done the previous year.
Yeah. So just doing kind of some research on history. I mean, really it just takes a little bit of time to sit down, and you're sitting down in your recliner at the end of the day and actually just taking a look at how weather has performed certain times of the year. What's happened previously, what happened that previous winter, you know, how much moisture did you have going into planting, kind of all those factors. Probably that's what it sounds like. I'm assuming you're saying is.
Yeah. Really, it's going to be difficult. Find another year that's like this year, because what would be best case scenario is for, like, Charlie, where he lives, for example, to take what his summer has been like and try to find another summer that was somewhat replicated like this, and what kind of decisions, what was planted, you know, how did things behave, looking at some yield data, that sort of thing, for those types of years. But this one is quite unique this year.
Yeah, I agree.
We, you know, middle of the state, it has never been this hot and humid for this long in Michigan, the middle part of Michigan, where, you know, again, we have severe drought. So, I mean, looking at the hybrids, the varieties, and I still go back to the biologicals, because the biologicals can play a tremendous role in negating weather, which we're all going to have, good, bad, hot, dry, wet. There's a tremendous bang for your buck in implementing the biologicals into your program to help minimize, you know, the weather, especially like a product like Emphasis, nitrogen fixation. When it's dry, the plant's not uptaking nitrogen. Well, with this product, you have nitrogen feeding the plant continuously. So that's one key thing, especially this year, you know, in Michigan, middle of the state that folks need to look at, dealers need to look at, dealers need to convey to their customers to really look at these, the biological products that Legend Seeds and YMS, YieldMaster Solutions offer.
Yeah, absolutely, Charlie. So to kind of wrap up, guys, I know you guys are busy and I appreciate you joining me on this podcast episode. And I named it Aw Crop because it's something that all of our farmers say. It's just something that everybody says when it comes to making farming decisions, because there's something every single year that you say the term, and I've said it before, of shoulda, where I should have done this, you know, I should have done that. And you're never going to have a absolute perfect year in farming or agriculture as a whole. So just kind of one last question for both of you is, we all know harvest is going to be here before we know it. We can only prepare so much, but how do, in your words, can you guys say that growers and dealers, customers, anybody in agriculture best prepare themselves for what's coming in 2026?
So don't procrastinate. It happens. Cool. And you know, if you can get your acre plan, get a framework of your acre plan and your input needs early, again, the seed industry at this time of year, the cash discounts are large. It will improve your return on investment later on down the road. But there's so many growers that we have that, you know, I'll get a call like the end of March. Hey, I need, I need 25 bags of corn. Well, you know, we all know the seed companies have their best hybrids, best performing hybrids. And a lot of times those products are sold out by that time. So don't procrastinate. Get a framework. Work with your myself, account manager, your dealer. Financing is always available, of course. So don't procrastinate. That's my biggest word.
Perfect. Love it. All right, Steve, give us your last good words.
Yeah. I guess I like that, Charlie. I think I'm not procrastinating. I guess not procrastinating is very good advice. On this year, going from what I know in 25 for where we are in 26, you know, there's all the stuff that's going on around us. Charlie's right on the, this would be where I think going into harvest this year, you know, one is just very not, I guess, seed. I'll go back to, you know, you got to look in the mirror, make sure you got yourself straight and that you're just mentally and physically ready to just do what this season needs. And it's just busy. If you're a farmer, if you're a dealer, if you're in a dealer, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. So you just got to, you know, take care of yourself. But just purely, plainly, I'll repeat probably what Charlie said over multiple times here on this. This is not the year to lollygag around if you're a JDF guy, get your JDF order in, use their bridge, use the system. They've got a great system to bridge from one year to the next and put in a big order. You can always change that order. Could always cancel that order. It doesn't cost you anything to take stuff off your order. You know, so if you're on a dealer level, get in front of your customers if they're JDF guys and get them to get that order placed, because I think the dollars, I think they'll be rewarded for that, you know, come the end of the year. It just your average cost per acre will be down by doing that. And then the other part there of Charlie's advice to not procrastinating, whether, you know, the dollars, that's a stressful time. It is a stressful time with the way things are. There's unknown stuff in the markets and all this monkey business with tariffs. And just, there's just so many things unknown. Get your financial house, whatever it is, however good or bad or ugly it is, get it figured out and get your seed taken care of. Just get that done and get your biologicals taken care of as soon as you can, because that it's not very often that you're going to have an opportunity for the discounts that Legend, for example, provides on the early side of the year. And that's different. A lot of guys just want to wait, and I don't blame them for that. They're looking at a tax season maybe coming up, or maybe they want to push something on the other side of the year. I mean, there's this is not the year to wait, in from my opinion. Now, I hate to age myself, but I've farmed a long time. I've been here for 15 years and I've helped a lot of farmers. I'm still involved. I still have money involved in farm operations. We're not going to sit on our hands this year. So that's not just coming because I want to sell seed. I think that's just very good advice coming from, I guess, a banker that I do a lot of business with over the last how many years. And I think that's, it's just coming from experience there from my point of view.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Well, thank you guys both for joining me on this podcast. I think it's been a great conversation, and you guys brought up a lot of great points, especially for down to the grower level, some of the things you should be thinking about. And if anybody has any other additional questions, you can reach Steve and Charlie on our website, or anybody on our Legend team in your area. Just go to legendseeds.net. Or the Yieldmaster Solutions team, like Charlie alluded to with a lot of the biological products, and ask all those questions. That's what our team is here for. So thank you to Charlie and Steve for joining me again. And I hope we talk again soon, and maybe hopefully no one will have to say, crap, at the end of 2026.
maybe you'll invite us back. We can talk about the past.
Right.
I might. You guys did great, and I appreciate your time, but thank you for joining us
thank
on
you.
The podcast, and we will see you out in the field.